morning, everyone. Everyone doing all right? Enjoying the colder weather? Yeah. No? I'm loving it. Yeah. It is kind of warming up. I'm sad about that. I've actually enjoyed the cold weather. I'm like run really warm, and so yeah, the cold weather is nice. I'm not sweating so much. Anyway, maybe that's too much information. But anyway, my name is Rodney Fletcher. If you didn't hear in the video, I am a student ministry volunteer here at Crossbridge, and I'm super excited to be here this morning to share this message with you. I got the text from Wes, and he was like, hey, like, I'm at the bottom of my reserves. Can you do this? And so I don't know if that's like a compliment, like I like the save the best for last, or hey, no one better than you can do this, but here I am. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks for being here this morning. If this is your first time, welcome. So I think that all too often, as followers of Jesus, whether we do this consciously or unconsciously, I'm not entirely sure, but I think that we have a hard time admitting that we're having a hard time, right? Like, I think that either that, or we have this like difficulty admitting that God feels distant as followers of Jesus. We think it's like this ultimate sin. And I don't know why that is, but I think But I think a good summary of this is someone wrote, they said, we have believed, like followers of Jesus, we have believed that faith does not mean to acknowledge and embrace negativity. We have thought that acknowledgement of negativity was somehow an act of unfaith, as though the very speech about it conceded too much about God's loss of control, right? But I think if we're honest, like this feeling that God is not as present as he's told us he's going to be, or God is not as active in our lives as we would want him to be, is something that all of us feel at times. Like if we look deep within ourselves, it's something that we all feel at times, or maybe it's just me, but I have. Like I totally understand this. There have been, and I'm sure there will continue to be, times that God doesn't feel as present as he says he is. Or maybe, and this is, might be even worse, it feels as if God is ignoring us, or God is not listening to our prayers, right? He's not listening to the cries from our hearts that we're lifting up to him. And it seems like no matter how often or how desperately we're praying to God, he's just ignoring us or not answering us or not cooperating with us. And it's not, and the thing is, like, it's not that we're asking for outrageous requests, right? It's not like I'm praying to God, God, please, may I just be like a millionaire this week. Like, may I just like win, like, or have a relative, like, just gift me $1 million, right? That would be a little unrealistic. And it's not like I'm asking for that. Or it's not that I'm asking God, may I never be sick ever again in my entire life. I just am asking that this illness that's like plaguing my life or has been bothering me for weeks on end, that's affecting every other area of my life, would just kind of go away, right? Like we're not asking for anything outrageous. We're just asking for like daily requests from God. We're asking him for the daily stuff. And it seems in those moments as if God is uncooperative with what we're asking. And when this happens, we're left with the question, like, what are we to do when God is uncooperative? What are we to do when God is uncooperative? And I think, again, that this is something that we've all wrestled with at least once in our lives. We may, and by this I mean that I do, think during these times, God, I've done no wrong, and it seems as if the odds are stacked against me, right? I have this unexpected bill that's popped up, maybe a medical bill, or maybe my internet has, like, they doubled it out of nowhere. And it's not because I've been spending my money carelessly that I can't cover this, but because it's kind of unexpected, right? Or again, like, I have this sickness, and it's not that I'm not taking care of myself, but this just sickness is random. Or maybe it's there's this constant temptation to partake in something that I know I shouldn't, whether that be something I know is like morally wrong, or maybe it's just a habit that makes me a little less bearable to be around. And it's not that I'm placing myself in situations that I know this is going to come up. Rather, this temptation seems to find me no matter where I am, at the coffee shop, at work, hanging out with friends, or even at church. And it's in these moments that we seem to cry out to God, asking him, like, why? Why does this keep happening? Why is the only question that we're left with? Like, when God is being uncooperative, we're left with this question, why? And for me, as a follower of Jesus, I try to consistently get into God's word, into the Bible, to read it, to find out more about him and find out more of how I am to live my life if I want to honor him. And luckily for me, the Bible often tells stories of people who feel the same way that I'm feeling in those moments, right? We have the story of this guy, Joseph, who was thrown into a pit by his brothers. And then he's sold into slavery. And then he's accused of sleeping with his boss's wife. And then because of that, he's thrown into prison. I'm not sure about you, but I can guess that there were often times in Joseph's life where he was like, God, what is going on? Like, why can't anything go my way? Or maybe there's the story of this guy, Job, right? Like, Job was the guy who lost all of his livestock, like cattle, goats, all of them, camels, lost it all. Like, then after that, someone runs up to him and says, Job, guess what? Now all 10 of your children have died too. And he's like, what? And all this is coming at him one-on-one, and then, or one after the other, and then out of nowhere, he's struck with like these sores all over his body. Like, I'm sure Job at times was like, God, like, why is this going on? And he was feeling, just like Joseph was, that God was being uncooperative with him. But for me, there's this very vulnerable story that's painted for us by a guy named Paul of struggling and wrestling with this question of why and wrestling with God when he seems to be uncooperative. Like, you may have heard of him. Paul is his name. And he wrote about half of the New Testament, right? Like, wrote half of the New Testament. He knows what it's like to feel as if God is uncooperative with him. And he tells us this struggle that he has. And he gives it for us in this letter called 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 7 through 10. It's going to be up on the screen behind me. He writes this. He says, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness and insults, in hardships and persecutions, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And it's for me that I think that Paul teaches us a lot about how we're to deal with this question of why when God is feeling uncooperative. Again, I think that we've unfortunately disregarded this question in favor of acting like everything's okay, but if we take a deep look at our lives, we realize this is something we all wrestle with. We too often, I think, as we're following Jesus, we too often, unfortunately, reject reality in favor of this ideology, right? Because ideologically, God is our Father. We know this to be true. We read it in his word. We hear it preached at church. We hear this, and we hear God is our Father, the one that provides for all that we need, the one who protects us, the one who leads us, the one who guides us. But, unfortunately, life is not left up to ideals, and it's filled with reality, and reality is sometimes that life is a lot harder than just saying, hey, God, like, is going to just take care of everything and every problem that I ever have, and I'm just going to sit back and relax. Life is not like that, and reality tells us that. Sometimes life is hard, even for those of us that follow Jesus. But I believe that facing the reality that life is not easy is something that the people of God had always done for a very long time, like accepting that reality is not, like, life is not going to be easy. And I think this because, like, authors in the Bible, they, like, I'm reading through it and I realize that they are refusing to subject their lives to any ideology, but time and time again, they resolve to tell the truth, even when that truth is saying, God is uncooperating with me right now. Like, he is not cooperating with anything that I'm asking him to do, even though he is my Father. He is not taking care of me in the way that he says he has. And God is oftentimes telling the authors of the Bible no, and they wrestle with that. And I think it's something that we need to wrestle with as well. And Paul is telling us here in 2 Corinthians that his experience of God has been one that's filled with, well, reality, because it seems to him as if God has not been working with him. It seems from Paul's perspective that God is telling him time and time again no to what he's asking him. And it's in this vulnerable passage that we learn 3 things that we must remember when it comes to feeling as if God is uncooperative, all right? 3 things that we learn. I think that the first thing we learn from Paul is that when God is uncooperative, we need to remember that this happens to the best of us, right? This happens to the best of us, essentially saying, like, you're not alone in feeling as if God is being uncooperative with you. For those of you that aren't following Jesus and still have questions about following Jesus, and to those of you that have been following Jesus for years, there are and will continue to be times that it seems as if we're asking God for one thing and we're either told no or we're given like the exact opposite of what we're asking. Like, it happens to the best of us. It happens to me, it happens to you, it happens to everyone. And like, I'm not saying, hey, it happens to me, so it happens to the best of us. What I'm saying is, like, Paul's experience speaks like this happens to the best of us. Like, Paul, just like a little lesson about Paul. Paul is the guy that, like, that he's like that guy. I mean, that's the best way to describe Paul. He's the guy who wrote more than half of the New Testament. He's the guy that was chosen by Jesus to spread like the message of Jesus to the entire known world at that time. Paul's the guy who is chosen to speak before the emperor of Rome and then is ultimately killed for sharing a message about Jesus to him. But Paul is also the guy, as we learn here, that has been given, in the language that Paul uses, a thorn in his flesh. And we're not exactly sure what Paul is alluding to here, and there have been lots of guesses, but I don't think that's the point. What Paul is trying to communicate is that there is something that is a hindrance in his life, and it hasn't gone away despite his constant pleading with Jesus to take it away, right? And in that, we learn that God is not cooperating with Paul, because Paul doesn't want it. Paul does not want this thorn, and essentially what this is something that's like annoying to him, and it's like hindering him from doing what he set out to do, but God is being uncooperating with him. And Paul realizes that experiences God as being uncooperative, and it makes me feel okay when I realize that. Like, it makes me realize, because hey, Paul is experiencing God as being uncooperative, and again, I'm not like, it doesn't make me feel great knowing that God is being uncooperative with Paul, just like God is uncooperative with me at times. But it does give me like this constant reminder, like, hey, I'm not alone in this, right? Like, it gives me this hope that knowing that one of the men who followed Jesus most closely experienced the same things that I experience at times when I try to follow Jesus. And it gives me hope that I'm not alone. Hope that this uncooperative God that I'm dealing with, he's not saying no to me or being uncooperative with me because of some unidentified sin in my life. Like, that's not why God's telling me no. It gives me hope that maybe, and just maybe, that there's more to a no than what meets the eye. That maybe there's more to God being uncooperative than what I see immediately right in front of me. So when I'm experiencing God as being uncooperative, I remember Paul, and I remember that God being uncooperative happens to the best of us. The second thing that Paul teaches here is that when it seems that God is being uncooperative, we should remember that Jesus understands. We should remember that Jesus understands. Again, Paul tells us that there were three times in which he went before Jesus, and the word he uses is he pleaded with Jesus. And this language that's used here paints this picture of Paul literally on his knees begging Jesus to rid this thorn from his life. This thorn, one is led to believe, that is something that has plagued Paul for a while. And at the outset, like, or at the end of this, we realize that it's something that Paul is going to be played with for the rest of his life, it seems. But the answer that Paul gets every time he pleads with Jesus is the same. Paul tells us that the answer he gets is Jesus says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And in this, like, we're left to wonder, like, what does this mean, Jesus? Like, power made perfect in weakness? Like, what are you even saying at this point? And I'm sure that Paul was asking the same things. Like, he hears this and he's like, what power and weakness? How is this even possible? Like, do you even know what you're talking about? And like, ultimately it's like, yes, he's Jesus. He does know what he's talking about, but that doesn't mean it's automatically clear what he's trying to say. Power and weakness. But I think that Jesus in these words to Paul is alluding back to something that's meant to give Paul hope. It's here that again, Paul tells us that he pleaded with the Lord three times, each time getting the same response, power and weakness. You see, we in our Bibles, we have four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they are biographies of Jesus' life, right? They tell the story from his birth to his death and resurrection. And in one of those stories, written by a guy named Matthew, there's this picture of Jesus, or the story of Jesus that's captured, in which Jesus is sharing dinner with his friends. It's the last dinner that he's going to have. And Jesus is about to go on trial, after being arrested. He's going to be found guilty, and then he's going to be nailed to a cross and killed. But again, like I was saying, just before all that happens, he's having this dinner with his friends, his closest friends, and he asks those that are there, he's like, hey, I'm going to go off into the mountains, and I'm going to go and I'm going to pray. So if you guys want to come with me, come on, we're going to do this. And so Jesus goes off, he goes off to the mountains, and he gets there, he's with his closest friends, and he says, hey, we're here praying, but I want you to wait here and watch while I go over here, and I'm going to pray on my own. But just keep watch while I do this. And while Jesus goes off on his own, Jesus is by himself, and there are three times that Jesus prays. And each time he prays, all three times, he says this. He says, if it is possible, and he's talking about what's about to happen. He's looking into the future, because he's Jesus, and he can do things like that. And he says, if it's possible, let this that's about to happen pass from me. And it's here that we get this snapshot of Jesus pleading with the Father, like Paul is pleading with Jesus. And Jesus is pleading that the trial and the crucifixion that's going to happen would not happen to him, right? Jesus is praying to his Father. He's like, please let this pass from me. And he's saying, essentially, is there any other way we can do what we've set out to do? Is there any other way for us to do this? And the answer that he gets is, no, there's not. And it's in this that Jesus, just like Paul, just like us, is experiencing God being uncooperative with him. But it's also here and later on that Jesus learns that there is no power in what the world may consider powerful, right? Because ultimately Jesus follows through with what's about to go down. He gets arrested, he's found guilty, and then he's nailed to a cross and dies. And then 3 days later, he raises from the dead. But when he's dead on the cross, it may seem to the world as if, hey, this guy who his followers have said this is the hope of the world, he's dead. There's no more hope. He's gone. He's dead. There's, what else are you going to do with this? But then 3 days later, he raises from the dead. It wasn't powerful to be crucified, but Jesus reimagines for us what it means to be powerful. And ultimately, power is found in the weakness. Power was found in the death and the resurrection of Jesus. It seems to me as if Jesus is saying to Paul, I know what you're experiencing. I experienced it myself. But trust me when I say you shouldn't worry about this thorn, Paul. I have power even over that. And he only realized that by trusting the Father, even when the Father seemed to be uncooperative with Jesus. And so Paul is telling us the same thing here. He's saying, trust in Jesus even when it seems as if he is being uncooperative with us. It may be that what we are praying to be removed from our lives is a pathway to greater power found in the grace of Jesus. And Jesus knows what you're going through. So remember, when God seems to be uncooperative, Jesus understands. Jesus understands. The last thing that Paul is teaching us here is that when God seems uncooperative, we must remember that this doesn't mean that he is uncaring. Uncooperative does not mean uncaring. It has been said that we live in this microwave culture, right? I've read that we live today in this microwave culture, which essentially means that we want things, and we want them immediately rather than at a later time. And when I read that, I'm like, hey, I live in this culture. That's not true about me. And I push back against people saying things like that. I'm like, that does not describe me at all. But then I can reflect back on my life throughout the week, and I realize it might actually describe me, because I use things like Amazon Prime, right? I go on Amazon and I see something that I really want. Maybe it's a book or household appliance, whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get this. This is a really good deal. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's not Prime. I'm not going to pay for something that's not Prime. I want what I want. Immediately, I want it within 24 to 48 hours, all right? Like, I'm willing to even pay more for something if it's prime because I'm going to get it quicker than if I didn't. Another example for me in my life is like food. I mean, if I'm being honest with you guys, I love like a really good crock pot meal. But time and time again, I choose like a microwavable meal over something made in the crock pot. And that might be just because like I'm a single bachelor guy. Like, that might be why. But time and time again, I'm like, nope, whatever's quickest, that's what I want. I don't want to wait for anything else. So I end up eating like a lot of microwavable food or cereal or order pizza, whatever it is. Like, I'm like, whatever gets it to me the fastest, that's what I want. But it doesn't only like affect me in those areas. When I look back on my life, it also affects me when it comes to like my walk with Jesus and my maturity as I follow Jesus. I tend to think that I should be moving faster than I am. And I tell myself like, hey, like, you know what? I really wrestle with getting angry. Let me be better about this. And like, I pray and I'm like, okay, like, God, like, may I not be angry so easily anymore. And then I think like I'm a lot further along than I am. And then I watch a football game at FSU and my anger comes back like just like that. And I'm like, what is going on? But we did win yesterday, so that was good. But like, things, I want them sooner than they actually will arrive. Like, it's just not the way life works. Like, life does not work like a microwave. It is more like a crock pot, even though we want things when we want them and not a second later. But I think this view has like flawed the way that we interact and view God. I think it has. Like I said, like Amazon, I get what I want when I want it within like 24 to 48 hours. Like, I get it within this time frame that works for me. But all too often, my experience with God is not the same as my experience with Amazon Prime, right? Like, you see, I've yet prayed to God asking him to help me be more patient and less angry, and within 24 to 48 hours, like, I'm cured of, like, my anger, right? Or my, like, impatience. Like, I've yet prayed to God asking him, like, hey, like, I have this unexpected bill that's come up, like, help me here. And within 24 to 48 hours, like, it's just taken care of, like, magically. It's always taken care of, like, at the expense of something else. But I do know that in those moments that I really have to take a look at this entire situation and try and see better, like, what is going on in God's perspective, all right? And I think that the same thing happens with Paul in these verses, because remember, he's, like, just told, like, power and weakness is what he was told. And I think Paul was looking at that and was like, what do you mean? Like, what does this even, like, it makes no sense. And eventually he gets to this point where he can write this. Because he goes on and he says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, and hardships, and persecutions, and difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The way I see it, when we are wrestling with God over how we're going to deal with this situation that he's being uncooperative with us in, like, that's what we need to see. Like, when I am weak, then I am strong. It's in those moments that, like, I'm struggling and wrestling with God that I am not only having a conversation with my Father, but I'm showing him that I trust him by saying, you are the only one that can help me with this, so help me. I'm saying to him and to the world, like, I trust you, God, because you are the only one that I can turn to. And it's through this that we learn not only to trust him in the big things, but in the small as well. But just because things don't play out the way that we want them to, doesn't mean that God does not care about us. God can, and I will even dare to say will, if we have the heart to trust him and eyes to see it grow us through those situations in which he seems to be uncooperating with us, especially when they're like really like sucky situations. See, it's through the cross and the death of Jesus that God displays his power. And through the eyes of the world, Jesus is done for, and with him, the hope of his followers are lost. But it's through that God raises him from the dead. Because the truth is, we don't have the resurrection without the cross. We don't have the resurrection without the cross, and we don't have like the goodness that comes from that without Jesus experiencing God being uncooperative with him. And even though in the moment it may have looked as if God didn't care about his son, we learn 3 days later that he couldn't have cared more about his son, and he couldn't have cared more about us. Paul learned that even though this thorn will continue to be with him, he can still rejoice knowing that Jesus works through our weakest moments, and ultimately that it is through this weakness that the grace and glory of Jesus is shown to the world. Paul learns through the continuing suffering by the hands of his thorn that just because God is uncooperative doesn't mean that he is uncaring. And he learned that through the cross and resurrection of Jesus, all right? In all of this, like, you may be thinking to yourself, like, oh yeah, like, all of that's, like, good in theory. Like, all that's really good in theory. But again, like, we're talking about real life here. For me, all of this, like, wrestling with God as being uncooperative, it came to a head this past year. It was Sunday, March 25th, 2018, that I got a text from one of my friends. He was a friend back home in Orlando, and I saw his name pop up on my phone, and I thought nothing of it because I was out doing something for work, so I went back to doing what I was doing. It happened to be a prayer walk, all right? Later that night, after I got home, I remembered, oh, wait, I have this unread text from one of my friends, so I opened it, and it was this text that would bring me to wrestle with God for the upcoming hours, days, weeks, and months about him being uncooperating. I opened up the text and it read, "Hey Rodney, Cassie's been in an accident and it doesn't look good." The thing is, Cassie was one of my best friends and someone that I met in college who eventually became like a sister to me. Her husband, Richard, was also one of my like very best friends in the world. And the first thing I did was I called my fiance Amanda and I told her what was going on and we started to pray. And then Amanda asked how I was doing and all I can remember was that I was thinking, I'm really not sure how I'm doing, but again, we prayed some more, asking that God would place his healing hands on our friend. Again, one that had become like a sister to me, one that was not only one of my best friends, but the wife of one of my other best friends. We asked God to give wisdom and insight to the doctors that were looking at her to figure out some way to reverse what was going on. And ultimately, we were asking for a miracle. I remember I didn't sleep that night, and all through the night, I was getting text after text saying the same thing. It doesn't look good. Then in the middle of the night, around 2:30, I got a text that said she's been declared brain dead. I didn't want to believe it. I remember sobbing and praying that God would reverse all that has happened. He didn't. I got out of bed around 7 the next day after a really poor night's sleep, and I got a call from my friend Richard, again, one of my best friends and Cassie's husband. And that phone call was one of the hardest phone calls I've ever had, because during that phone call, everything that I was hoping, maybe even against hope, that wasn't true, ended up being true. I left town that day, and as soon as I got to Kissimmee, I went to the hospital to see them both, and there were many tears shed that night, lots of hugs around the room, but honestly, I was mad. I'm angry with God. I had experienced death in my life before that point. I mean, great-grandparents and grandparents passing, but those were never unexpected, and this was. In one day, I had one friend lose their life and another his future, and I was angry. And I was asking, where are you, God, in all of this? If there was ever a time that God was uncooperative, it was then. It was definitely then. It has been a tough 8 months since that moment, with lots of questions and lots of anger all around the situation. But just the other day, I was talking to Richard on the phone. And I was just checking in with him to see how he was doing, sharing stories and laughing together. But he said this about his passing, about the passing of his wife. And it's in his words that I'm reminded of what Paul says in 2 Corinthians. And that is ultimately that just because God doesn't cooperate with what we want doesn't mean that he doesn't care. Because he does care deeply. We just need the eyes to see it. And that comes from trusting Jesus and trusting in the power that he can give in spite of the way that we're feeling. So my dear friend Richard says this. He says, "I could go on with such terrible ways that this accident has impacted me. But I'd like to start to transition into how the circumstance has also begun to be redeemed, despite the negative aspects. I've been able to continue to pursue the dream of becoming a physician with even more purpose and even more passion for medicine, having gone through this ordeal with Cassie. As a result of Cassie's passing, many in our community have turned towards Christ or looked towards God with new hope and renewed love. Because of my experience, I have been able to comfort and console others, to guide and be a light to others dealing with loss in ways I wouldn't have been able to otherwise. My faith has been tested and deepened and strengthened. Our God has been redeeming this situation from the very beginning, and he continues to do so even more ways than I can count. So I leave you with this question. How is God redeeming the situations in which you think he has been uncooperative?